This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Exodus chapter 10, verse 29. Moses said, "As you say, I will not see your face again." I will not see your face again.
Oh.
Even if I have seen it before. Sorry, Jeremy.
So I'll just have to wear a mask every time I see you?
At the very least, a balaclava. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine. That's warm. Unless I see you in the Australian summer, that'd be terrible.
Oh, man.
Well, I should get a balaclava here. All I've got is like a scarf over my face. Oh, so sorry. I'm Jeremy, and this is Scripture Read Badly.
I'm Ryan, and today we're going through the plagues of Egypt. We're going through the first 11 plagues. Is it 11? It's probably 11. Sorry if I got the number wrong already.
Definitely blanked on how many plagues there are.
10 plagues. It's definitely 10. Sorry, everyone.
Well, we're just going to do the first one. And number one is disgusting. Unless you like blood. Unless you like a vampire. Which I don't think any of our listeners are.
But imagine that. For the very first time, it would be like everything went right for them.
That's
the vampires
true.
Could just turn on the tap at home. They could go to the well. They could just bathe in the river and they're just drinking it in.
And there would be no violence.
Literally.
They would just drink it.
Exactly. But then we have to remember that there was a whole bunch of death as a result. Okay, so something to remember is that Moses and Aaron have just gone to Pharaoh and they've said, "Let our people go," and the staff has turned into a serpent, which has eaten the magician's staffs as well.
Yep.
And then Pharaoh said, "Nope, not going to let him go." And then it seems as though they leave. However, the text just picks up saying, "Then the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened." Can you imagine if he was standing in the the court of Pharaoh and God's like, "Hey Moses, his heart's hard, you should probably leave." And then he says, "Go to Pharaoh in the morning."
Yeah.
So Moses leave and then come back in the morning. And if he's in the water, stand at the bank to meet him, the bank of the Nile, and take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent. The staff of God, which was Aaron's staff.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, this wasn't the one that Moses had that was called the staff of God, but this is the staff that ends up budding in the wilderness to prove to the people of Israel that God will provide and that he is the Lord of all the earth. So, this is kind of interesting because that's the first thing that we see Aaron's staff do is get turned into a snake and then eat the others.
Yep.
So his staff has significance now as the vessel through which a miracle was performed in the sight of the most significant people in Egypt.
Yep.
So now his staff is being used for something else, and that is to dip it in the Nile as Pharaoh was bathing.
But the words that he uses is different. The language is now, "so that they may serve me in the wilderness." He doesn't just refer to a one-off feast. And I wonder if that's on purpose too.
Yeah, and we kind of got at this before where we said maybe God was pushing Pharaoh's buttons.
Yep.
Maybe he was chipping away at Pharaoh's resolve. And to begin with, Pharaoh thought, going into the wilderness for a feast is so dumb and it's going to mess up everything that I want to build. So, no, I'm not going to let you do it.
Yep.
And now, like you said, the language has changed to serve in the wilderness. But maybe it is that them following God and obeying him, getting into the wilderness, is serving him in itself.
Yeah.
And having a feast is serving him as well, because they would be offering things they haven't been able to offer because they haven't had things to offer necessarily. They probably haven't had much livestock, but they have had some, and we find that out later. But yes, there is definitely a change in language here, and it seems as though God is building on what he's already established.
Yep.
Building towards a climax. So,
and then in the speech, God leads them to say, "You will know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water." And so this is another miracle to show that God is powerful over the Godhead of the Pharaoh, who thinks he is powerful, which is not.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nile turns into blood.
Yes.
Which is like their main water source. So they drink it every day and they wash in it every day. And it's part of their food production, irrigation every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yep. Source of water, source of plumbing, source of bathing. All these things that
are... transport too.
Oh, yeah, and totally.
Trade in that.
Totally. The Nile River is huge. Of course they would use that for trading. That'd be way quicker than saddling up some camels and stuff. So God actually outlines everything that's going to happen. The fish are going to die. The Nile will stink. The Egyptians will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile. Then it's interesting how God says to Moses, "Say to Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, their canals, and their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, even in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone." So it isn't just the Nile, it's every tub that people wash their face in, it's every water vessel that people use for drinking, every well, every pond, everything that the Egyptian livestock drinks out of, everything is going to be turned into blood.
And that in itself is a miracle, because it's not like they just made the Nile blood and whatever people poured from the Nile into things became blood, but everything is blood. So it's not even like they put food dye in just one source.
Mm-hmm.
It was even sources that they had never seen turned into blood.
Yep. So that's crazy. And it happened in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants.
Yep.
And it's so insane, because then the fish in the Nile died. And there are a lot of fish in the Nile. Yep. It is the primary water source in Egypt, and definitely the primary water course. And so we have fish going up and down every single day. We have fishermen whose entire livelihood is built on catching these fish.
Yep.
And suddenly they're all dead and they all rise to the surface. That must be a very, very eerie thing to see, besides the fact that it had turned into blood.
Yeah.
So then the Nile stank as well. And it wouldn't have just stunk when you got close to it. You would have been able to smell this from a very, very long way away.
Yep.
It would have been like living near a garbage dump.
Gross.
Where you could not get away from this smell. But way more intense. It would be like living near a pile of dead fish. And we all know how fish smell when they have been caught and then killed.
Yep.
Let alone soaked in blood. Yep. And the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile, and there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt, but the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts.
Which is weird to me, because then what are they going to do? Yeah, I can make the Nile into blood too! It's already blood. Like, how do they do that?
That's right. Where did they get their water from to test that? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'd never even thought of that.
That's weird.
Yeah. Unless it happened like it was in The Prince of Egypt, where the Nile turns into blood, and then Pharaoh says, can you do this as well? And the sorcerers get a basin of water before the rest of the water in Egypt had turned into blood, and they performed the miracle.
Okay, so it's just his attempt of being like, that isn't powerful, I'll show you powerful.
Yes, exactly. But nonetheless, there were physical ramifications for this plague.
Yeah.
And it's insane. It's completely insane. So he went into his house, and he didn't even take this plague to heart.
Yeah.
And all the Egyptians dug along the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. So it could be that just the surface water had been turned into blood, and the waterbed, I mean the watershed underneath, was not, and they could still drink groundwater. But yep. That's crazy, because it says 7 full days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile. So all the Egyptians are having to dig for their water along the banks of the Nile, something that they used to be able to get very easily.
Yeah.
Kind of in a similar way to how the Israelites had to suddenly go and get their own straw when it had seemingly been provided for them.
Yeah.
So they were having to do not only enough to stay alive in drinking water, but also they would have had to do everyday work as well. Otherwise, yeah, things would have fallen apart and they would have had an economy.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would have been a lot of fish sold the next day.
Fish.
Yes. But then we move on to the plague of the frogs. So and Moses and Aaron... Sorry.
The language changes again. Let my people mm-hmm. go that they may serve me. Like, he doesn't even say to a specific place or a specific time. He just yeah. says, let my people go. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've heard people say before that... I think I've heard pastors say that each of these plagues was supposed to combat a specific god or goddess in Egypt. Yep. And so I've pulled up an article where it outlines these, and we don't have to go into them in detail, but it is cool to note that the first plague was against the Nile, turning it into blood, and the god of the Nile was the god Hapi, H-A-P-I, Hapi or Happy. So he was the god of the Nile. He was a water bearer. And so then this first plague was turning his water into blood. So immediately that's strike two against the gods, because God already turned the staff into the serpent. So yep. he was saying, this is like Apep, and then this one's like Hapi. And then we move on to the next plague, where God says, if you refuse to let the people go, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that shall come up into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and your people and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up on you and on your people and on all your servants. It's like flipping cane toads in Queensland, man.
Yeah.
Except way worse.
So they're get coming out up your out golf of... clubs.
Yeah. I've definitely done that. Hitting cane toads with golf clubs is so much fun. Because they just don't move when you nope. line up for a swing. You kind of have it there like a real golf ball. You yep. have it right next to it, and then you take it back and swing, and boom.
And pop. For the record, for our vegetarian listeners, they're a pest in Australia. We sort of have to get rid of them. It's they're not a cruelty thing. It's terrible. We're not terrible people.
It's actually encouraged to yep. kill cane toads. Yep. Because there's no natural predator and we don't know how to get rid of him.
Nope.
Because they were just introduced and it was dumb. Yep. That's a fairly natural predator. So then sorry, what were you going to say?
But then with the frogs that come out of the Nile, does that mean that God has cleaned the Nile so it's back to being water, or is it still blood at this point and the frogs are coming out of blood? So they're like blood frogs.
I don't anticipate frogs coming out of the Nile not being covered in blood.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that God would have just suddenly taken the plague away from the Nile.
Yeah.
Because I believe that through all of this, God protected his people. Yep. And the water that they had where they lived was clean.
Is that something you have read or something you just...
I can't remember if I read this in the Bible or if yep. I read it in Shadow of the Mountain by Cliff Graham, where there's a pretty gnarly depiction of all these plagues. But in that, at the very least, and he probably got it from some source, whether that was the Bible or a tale passed down through Jewish
yep.
Tradition, where the land of Gershon, where most of the Israelites lived, that was clean, that nothing bad happened there.
Okay.
Which
makes sense.
I don't know. It makes sense that God would have protected his people that he was about to deliver.
Yeah.
So, the frogs come up out of the bloody Nile, and they not only come up out of the Nile, but they will swarm all through everywhere the Egyptians are.
Yep.
Which would have been scary, but frogs don't really do much. They're just a pest, and so they probably ruin things that you were cooking or things that you were boiling. They get boiled in there. Frog in a kettle situation. And it would just be really disturbing. Now, there was a god in Egypt, a goddess, named Heket, H-E-K-E-T, the goddess of fertility, water, and renewal, who had the head of a frog.
Boom.
So we've already seen that water's been hit. So now fertility and renewal, represented by this frog, are seeming to plague the Egyptians. So this is strike three for the gods. And meanwhile, Yahweh is fulfilling his purposes by slowly softening Pharaoh's heart and getting him to the point where he will command the people to go.
Yeah, but in verse 7, the magicians did the same by their secret arts, but then, once again, they didn't take away the plague, they just showed that they could do it too.
It could have been just trickery, and maybe they already had some frogs that they'd captured and then made them appear out of their sleeves or something.
But still, Pharaoh is irritated by the frogs enough that he asks Moses and Aaron to plead with the Lord to take away the frogs.
Yep.
And I will let the people go.
Yep. And then when they ask God to take away the frogs, which, notice they didn't ask God to take away the blood in the Nile. So,
nope.
Because Pharaoh wasn't bothered by it, he didn't take it to heart. So that's probably the reason that we can assume that the frogs came up out of a bloody Nile.
Yep.
So, yep, they appeal to God and God takes it away. And they shall be left only in the Nile. Which is, if we're to assume that the Nile was still blood, means that there is not only dead fish in the bloody Nile, but there's also dead frogs now.
Yep. And possibly people and horses.
Oh, yeah, but they also... Lake
Burley Griffin.
Yeah.
It's the Lake Burley Griffin of Egypt.
Yes.
For the record, yep. Lake Burley Griffin is a man-made lake in my hometown, Canberra, and it's definitely got dead bodies in it.
Yep. Yep. Great. So then, when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart again, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said that he would. So then comes Moses and Aaron going into them again and saying, "Yo, let our people go, otherwise there will be gnats that fill the land of Egypt, formed out of the dust of the earth."
Now tell me about gnats. Are gnats like mosquitoes, or are they like little flies?
Oh, hang on. Before we say that, right. I was wrong. They didn't go back to Pharaoh. It was just that Pharaoh hardened his heart again. Yeah, exactly. He reneged. Even if they didn't know that, God said, "Now, do another plague."
Yep.
So they didn't even... Yeah, that's crazy. They didn't even say, "Let my people go again." It was just that the gnats came out of nowhere. And there were gnats on man and beast, and all the dust of the earth became gnats. Gross. In all the land of Egypt. And the magicians tried to do the same thing, but they couldn't. So the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." But Pharaoh's heart was still hardened, and he wouldn't listen to them. All right, let me look up a picture of a gnat, just so we have a very specific image that we're going for here.
And I wonder if God was like, "This gnat thing, there's so many of them and they're so little that this will be hard for the sorcerers to do." Or if it was just like, "Oh, this is the next step of irritation from the frogs." But then what god of the Egyptians was this defeating? Was there one?
Yes, actually. The gnats were to combat Geb, the god of the dust of the earth.
Ooh, hello.
So he was the Egyptian god of the earth.
Yep.
And his ruling was over everything that had to do with the dust, the soil and everything of the earth. So this was God turning that into a pest. And a gnat is a large I mean, there is a large variety of things that can be called gnats. It's a loose descriptive category for a variety of flying insects. So, like small, spindly flying insects that get everywhere. I've always pictured them like male mosquitoes, which look really creepy and have long legs. They fly, and so they would have been in people's ears. They would have been in people's nostrils. They would have been all over people and all over livestock and everything. So that's what the gnats would have done, which is pretty scary to think of. Then Pharaoh's heart was still hardened, and so instead of going back to Pharaoh, he went back to Pharaoh, and he said, "Let my people go, otherwise I'll send a swarm of flies on all of your people and into all your houses, and houses of Egyptians will be filled with swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand."
But on that day, boom.
Yes, but on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies shall be there, that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. So, wait, does that mean these other things have affected the Israelites?
Highly possible.
Okay. That makes sense. But if they know that this is... it's essentially Pharaoh's doing.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just getting even madder at the Egyptians and saying, you know this? It's because Pharaoh is not letting us go. So then they're kind of backing God's cause a little bit more.
Yeah.
They're getting on board.
Interesting. And as we know in Australia, in the summers, flies are irritating.
Oh my goodness.
Incredibly irritating. And they spread disease a little bit.
Yes. Yes. Yes, they do.
So gross.
Yep. So, now we have the flies. Super gross.
And there was a fly god?
Yes, there actually was. There was a god named Khepri, Khepri, who is the god of creation, movement of the sun, and rebirth, whose head was that of a fly.
Well.
So this was in direct contrast to the god of creation. God was saying, you call this fly the god of creation, I'll show you what it can do. So that's yet another god that that Yahweh was taking a swing at.
Once again Pharaoh reneges and is like, go sacrifice to your god within the land. He must be so irritated.
So maybe he thought, well, Goshen's been spared, so why don't you go to Goshen and sacrifice there? Maybe that's what he meant.
Yeah, true.
Great. So then Aaron responds saying, no, we're not going to do that because the Egyptians will think it's terrible, so then they'll stone us. We need to go 3 days away so that we're out of the firing line, so to speak. So Pharaoh says, nope. He says, yes, yeah, you can do that. Just leave me. And then eventually he also hardens his heart again. Then
it's interesting that he says, only don't go too far and plead for me. So he's like recognizing that they can intercede with God for him. But then his heart hardens again.
Yep. So then we have the livestock dying. Again, it was let my people go, and Pharaoh says no. And then he says, a very severe plague will fall upon your livestock that are in the field.
Yep.
Including the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the herds and the flocks. So that's
the chicken.
Not only all the food, all the meat that they eat, but also their transportation.
Yep.
All of the horses that were in the field were going to get killed by this plague.
There was a distinction made between the livestock of Israel and of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. So then nothing of that belonged to the people of Israel will get killed.
Nope.
And the Lord said, this time tomorrow I'm going to do this. And the next day he did it. The livestock of the Egyptians died, but not one of the livestock of the people of Israel died. And Pharaoh sent, and behold, not one of the livestock of Israel was dead. But his heart was still hard, and he still didn't let the people go.
I wonder if that part in verse 5 where God said he would do it, God was giving him a chance to let the people go. Like, it was a warning, like, I will do this. Hoping that Pharaoh would be like, all right, you can leave.
Totally.
He's already proved himself a few times that he'll do it.
Yeah, my goodness. As if Pharaoh wouldn't have at least taken a hint by this point.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you can see that he recognizes that God has power and that he needs to get right with him. So he said, plead with God on my behalf. But even still, he's had it made abundantly clear to him exactly what God wants.
Yeah.
Yet he is refusing to do it, which I just think is so dumb.
What a great guy.
Yeah. Okay. The plague of the boils. We can talk about the plague of boils. Or no, before we do that, you know what? Before we do that, let's have story time. You cool with that?
Story time. Hang on, are you going to make an intro track for story time?
No, I could just make that the intro track.
All right, there you go.
Yeah. If you wanted to do that each time, then that's perfect. Okay, great. So, close your eyes and imagine. You are an Egyptian. You look down on the Hebrew people, the Israelites. You spit in their faces. They are your slaves. Prior to this moment, you've had cities built by them, or at the very least buildings and roads and things of that kind. You think very, very little of them. But there is this one guy, that you vaguely recognize from decades earlier, who you've heard whisperings of, that he is Moses, returned from the wilderness, the prince of Egypt. And you think, this guy is up to no good. He goes in and talks to Pharaoh, or so you hear. And from what you gather, he has asked Pharaoh to let your slaves go. Obviously you're going to say no. Obviously Pharaoh did say no. But then the very next day, you wake up, you go to the basin to splash your face with water, and it's blood. It freaks you out, so you go to a different water vessel, and it's blood. You stumble outside your house, and you hear cries of alarm, and you smell something in the air, something revolting. You make your way towards the Nile, and as you get closer, you hear people chattering amongst each other and pointing. As you crest a rise, you see that the entirety of the Nile River is blood. Not only that, but you see schools and schools of fish floating dead in the water. You talk to somebody next to you and they say that all the water in their household is blood, that there is no water to be found in all of Egypt. You begin to get a little bit frantic because water is essential for survival. So you troubleshoot, and eventually you find out that you can dig along the edge of the Nile and you can access water that way. But this is in no ways convenient, and in order to get close enough to get water next to the Nile, you have to be close enough to smell the revolting, putrid odor emanating from that once mighty waterway. 7 days later, you're going about everyday life, doing your best to stay alive and drink water that you can find somewhere, when all of a sudden frogs start coming out of nowhere. You look down and suddenly they're all over you. They're crawling in your pots, they're crawling in your ovens, they're covering the faces of your children. It freaks you out. You lock yourself in a room where hopefully no frogs can get under the door. You stuff things in cracks so that none can get in there, but still they come. Then one day they die. Overnight they just die. So then you have these dead frogs everywhere. You sweep them out onto the street, and eventually people collect them and throw them into the dead, bloody Nile, which still smells, and now smells even worse. You have all kinds of misgivings about everything that's happening, and then come the gnats, these bugs that appear out of nowhere, suddenly filling the air. They are in your mouth, they're in your nostrils, in your ears. You can hardly see a foot in front of your face because of how thick this swarm is. You are distraught. You don't know what's happening, but you hear that Pharaoh is still refusing to let the people of Israel go. You begin talking to your family and to your neighbors about just letting them go so that you can have peace. But then you hear that Pharaoh again refused to let them go, and flies replace the gnats. Flies crawling all over your bodies, all over your faces, the faces of your children, the faces of your pets. Every surface that you touch, every surface that you walk on is covered in flies. These small, black, disgusting creatures. Some people, some animals stumbling down the streets have flies covering every hole in their bodies, and they fall down and die, and yet more flies breed inside of them, producing even worse waves than before. And eventually the flies begin to subside, but then all the livestock die. It could be a result of the flies. They could have destroyed the immune systems of all these flies, of all these creatures, but nonetheless, you suddenly have a lot of diseased, dead animals all around you. Even your horses, your donkeys that you use for transportation are dead and gone. There is hardly any meat that can be scavenged from these carcasses to be eaten. So that breeds more flies and it breeds more disease. And then you can open your eyes, because that's where we're up to. Here in chapter 9, verse 6, we begin the plague of the boils. Take us through this, Jez.
Well, can you refer to the Egyptian god that this was attacking? It was like the health god or something.
Yeah, so the livestock was to do with Hathor, the Egyptian goddess of love and protection, whose head was a crow. Crows obviously being birds of prey, carrion birds. Yep. So then the boils are supposedly opposing Isis, the goddess of medicine and peace.
Boom. Yep. And it was kind of a creative plague, this one, because Moses went into a kiln and got soot and threw it into the air, and it became fine dust over the land, and all man and beast throughout the land got sores, which are not fun and are gross and very itchy. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of their boils, and so they couldn't even try doing it themselves. But still, the heart of Pharaoh was hardened and did not listen. And so Moses then got the call from God to rise up in the next morning, and they did a hail plague, which hail destroys a lot of plants and goodness and keeps people inside, and if it gets big can destroy even houses and people.
Yep.
And God used it to show that he is also in control of the weather and is in control of many things.
Yep. And so the hail was opposing Nut, the goddess of the sky.
Solid name.
Yeah, N-U-T. So, it's written as nut, but hey. Okay, have you heard of this hail being fire?
No, but I feel like that would do similar damage.
Hmm. Yeah, it says that there will be hail such as never has been in Egypt from the day it was founded until now, and that it would kill whatever was outside of shelter.
But I feel like also that that part of the world wouldn't see hail that often, right?
Probably not. Like, I mean, they wouldn't have had the same types of storms. Yeah, yeah. So, maybe. I mean, it would suck to be living in this time.
Yep.
Even as an Israelite, it would have been terrifying.
Yep, but in 19, he even warns, get your livestock and all that you have in the field into safe shelter.
Yep.
Because the hail must be pretty hectic.
Yeah.
And that's almost like a preamble to putting the blood on the doors for the last plague, because if you didn't believe that it would be that hectic, then you wouldn't go and save your livestock, you wouldn't listen.
Yep. Yep, so he offers this warning to Pharaoh.
Is that what happens? There is fire too in 23. The Lord sends thunder and hail and fire ran down to the
earth. Whoa. Okay,
so
wow.
That's crazy hail, because that's not just the icy rock, but that's also fire.
Wow. Okay, that's yep, crazy. That's insane. Wow. In Shadow of the Mountain by Cliff Graham, which is a fantastic book, he depicts this plague in a pretty intense way with the character that you're following, Caleb, who at that time was not part of Israel, so he was having these things inflicted upon him. Whether or not that's true is remains to be seen, but he was out in the field at the time that it started, and he could see the hail and the fire destroying these beasts that he was near, these horses and things. Everything was getting crushed and destroyed, and he panicked and ducked into a cave, and all that he could see was destruction all around him. And it was pretty cool to read that, because it put it in perspective, because it's so easy to think there was a hailstorm. Yeah, we've grown up on the east coast of Australia, we know what hail is like, and it's hard, but I mean, it's not going to damage your car.
Yeah,
but this would destroy buildings. That's how insane this was. So
yeah,
they needed sufficient shelter. It said that there was hail and fire flashing continually.
That's crazy.
In the midst of the hail. Very heavy hail, such as never been seen in the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Wow.
And okay, every plant of the field and broke every tree of the field.
Like, yeah, and it killed men and beasts as well.
Yep.
Wow.
But then in the land of Goshen, there was none.
Yep.
As another label of, like, these are my people and I'll protect them.
So they probably would have been able to see it in the distance, and it would have been crazy, because I mean, seeing a lightning storm from a distance is pretty intense, but seeing a storm like this, that's something else.
Yep,
that is something else.
Crazy.
So then Pharaoh summons Moses and Aaron and says, plead with the Lord, for there has been enough of God's thunder and hail. I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. And then Moses said, as soon as I've gone out, I'll stretch out my hand. It's interesting how it switches to say Moses said to him. But we're assuming that it's still through Aaron. The thunder will cease and there will be no more hail, and nothing else will die. But it's to show you that the earth is the Lord's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you do not yet fear the Lord God. So all the things, all the crops were destroyed. Moses went out and everything stopped. But then when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet again and hardened his heart. So this seems to show that it is Pharaoh deciding against God. So it isn't that... So initially God said, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, but it doesn't look like God's helping him anymore. It doesn't look like he needs God's help to harden his own heart at this stage.
But also, maybe he wasn't in... Whoa, a piece of snow just fell in the car downstairs.
Wow.
Maybe it was originally that it was Pharaoh's decision all along, but God just put these thoughts in his head. So he had the choice to listen to those thoughts or to not listen to the thoughts. Or, once again, maybe it was the enemy putting thoughts and he listened to the enemy. But then, once again, Moses comes back and tells in the hearing that it will be done, that locusts will come. And I think, once again, he gives him a warning. Yeah. If you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after the hail and the fire has already destroyed most of their plants. And then what locusts do is do even more destruction.
They eat whatever is left. Everything that's in houses. Yep. They eat everything that is left in the field. All the crushed barley and everything that... all the crops that were outside. They eat all of that. Yep. And basically, this ends up with the Egyptians having nothing to eat.
Yep, and Pharaoh would have known that. So that warning that he said after 9 of the plagues, like, hey, now I'm going to send locusts if you don't let us go, he would have known what destruction that could have done.
Yeah.
And he's just like, nah, I'm good.
Well, maybe he thought at this point, nothing could be worse than what we've already experienced.
Oh, that's true.
So maybe he thought, how bad can it be?
Yep. And even his servant said, like, how long will this man be a snare? Do you not understand that Egypt is already ruined? So everyone around him understands what is happening.
Yep. Yep. So there, the servants themselves say that Egypt is ruined. And it could just be that they mean the glory of Egypt is ruined. However, if you consider everything that has happened up to this point, the Nile River is blood. It is filled with dead fish and frogs, which were probably consumed and bred all the flies and the gnats, and that resulted in the death of all of their livestock, and all of their crops have been destroyed, and a lot of their shelters have been destroyed. Everything except the houses made of brick and mortar have probably been completely obliterated by the storm.
Yep.
There have been people that have died out in the field, even just outside their own home in the storm. And now, whatever was left just got eaten by locusts, and the locusts are all over people and in people's houses. And this would be possibly the most terrifying event in human history to live through.
Yep.
So it makes sense that they say Egypt is ruined, because it really is. All that is left is Goshen, which potentially had the plague of the blood and the frogs and the gnats and the flies already. But then everything else. Oh, yeah, and not to mention they're covered in boils and sores, which would be... come on.
Just a great day.
My goodness. I mean, at this stage, we don't really know how long this has been going on for. It said the plague of the blood went on for 7 days. But then it seems as though... the other plagues only went for a short amount of time before Pharaoh begged Moses to take it away.
Yep.
So this whole thing, these first 8 plagues, could have taken place in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's insane. That is insane. But more likely it would have been stretching closer to 3 or something like that. So then, after all the locusts finally disappear, when they had covered the face of the entire land, and the land had darkened as a result, they ate the plants in the land, and all the fruit of the trees that the hail had left, not a green thing remained, neither tree nor plant of the field, through all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh quickly called Moses and Aaron, and seemingly repented. He confessed his sin to them, and said, "Forgive my sin, please, only this once. Plead with the Lord to remove this death from me." And then it says, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let people go.
Nope. Once again.
So the locusts, did I say the locusts? They were opposing Seth, the god of storms and disorder. Because the locusts were sent from the sky and set everything into disarray. So that's supposedly what that was opposing. Then we have the ninth plague, the last one that we'll cover today. And good thing too, because we are running very short on time. And the ninth plague is the plague of darkness. And most people know that this is opposing the god Ra, the god of the sun. And Ra was largely seen as the most prominent among the Egyptian gods other than Pharaoh himself.
Yep. The god of gods.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So this is the big dog, and Moses stretched out his hand, and there was darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness to be felt.
Yep.
That is intense. I don't know if you've ever been in a dark room where it's been a little bit scary.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
I definitely used to be afraid of the dark. But a darkness that feels so oppressive that it makes you feel claustrophobic.
Yep.
That's what this is talking about here.
Have you ever read 30 Days of Night?
No.
It's like in Alaska when there's a whole month of darkness because the sun is nowhere to be seen. And vampires come out of nowhere and just, like, destroy a town.
Wow.
I'm always reminded of that. Like, anytime I think of long days of night. Because you just go insane. Because you don't have any vitamin D. And there's no, like, rhythms to the day because it's always night. And so... And this isn't a month of it. And there's no vampires in it. But it's still, like, freakish.
That we know of. There was plenty of blood. True.
There's probably a lot of vampires. But they didn't know when it would finish, and so it would just feel like forever. It's the same with when you're put in isolation. Well, I imagine I've never done it, but when you're put in isolation in prison, that's usually in a dark room, and you don't know the timing of it, and just sends you insane. And so if you're in a position like that, and let's say they don't have any candles, so you're just sitting in your town after a lot of locusts have come through, so you don't know where all the food is. You might still have boils. It would just be so freaky.
And it said that nobody rose from their place for 3 days.
Yeah.
While the darkness was there. But the Pharaoh called to Moses somehow and said, "Go serve the Lord. Your little ones also may go with you.
Yep.
Only let your flocks and your herds remain behind." But obviously that's not what God wanted.
Nope.
So Pharaoh's heart was hardened again, and Pharaoh said to him, "Get away from me, take care never to see my face again, for on the day you see my face you shall die." Moses said, "As you say, I will not see your face again."
Yep.
And that's where we end up at the end of this episode of Scripture Read Badly, at the end of Exodus chapter 10, going through the first 9 of 10 plagues. The next episode in a few days' time will cover the Passover and subsequent death of the firstborn in Egypt. Sorry to spoil it if you haven't read the Bible. Yes, this hopefully was insightful and helped you to get a bit of perspective on what the plagues would have been like in Egypt and how crazy they would have been and how they actually would have destroyed the nation entirely and let it come to ruin. So that's the place that we are leaving off today. And you can follow us in all the social medias, all the main ones at least, and you can also read our writings at various places. This has been Scripture Read Badly. My name is Ryan.
And I am Jeremy.
We hope to have you tune in next time. And we are going to leave you with a piece of advice from Jeremy.
Here's my piece of advice. When you go to sleep, it helps not to look at screens for a while before you go to sleep, because the blue hues in the screen is like daylight and your brain instantly thinks you're supposed to stay awake. So either use an app that takes out the blues, or don't look at your screen just before bed. Second pieces of advice, when you're in bed, maybe not check your Facebooks and your messages, because half of the time you'll probably drop your phone on your face and that hurts.
All right, everyone.
Experience. Have a great week.
Bye.